You're listening to the Crypto Curry Club podcast with Erica Stanford. Our guest today includes Vince Howard, Senior Digital Marketing Lead at Open Banking.
This episode of Crypto Curry Club is brought to you by Plaid. Plaid.com.
Hey everyone, thank you for joining us for this session on open banking brought to us and sponsored by Plaid. So huge thanks to Plaid for bringing us this open banking series and looking at how open banking comes into crypto as well. Very lucky to be joined here by Vince Howard, who's an expert in the space, been working in open banking for years. So Vince, first of all, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, Erica. Pleasure.
And good to see you again. And first of all, if you could, I know that probably the vast majority of people aren't entirely sure exactly what open banking is. If you could please just give us a super simplified overview of exactly what open banking is, how it works, and also give some examples of where we're seeing open banking on a day-to-day basis already.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Open banking is probably a word or concept that most people have heard of, but I think to your point, we kind of don't know how the technology works. But open banking is just a really simple, secure way of individuals and businesses sharing their account data with third-party companies. The reason for this is obviously we all use banks, high street banks, private banks, etc. And those banks hold a lot of information about us in terms of our identity, our finances, you know, how we spend, our spending patterns, account balances. And that information is really valuable. And lots of really innovative financial technology or fintech companies have some really interesting and cool products that make our lives easier. But on enable to those things to work, they need access to that data. So open banking provides the really safe and secure way of sharing that data. And just to give an example of that, people may already be using it and not be aware, but you've got companies like Moneybox, you've also got Lloyds and other banks using open banking to provide paperless mortgages. So in other words, rather than you signing up for a mortgage online, having to download 3 months of records of your financial data, you can now authorize that third party or bank to see your account and access your account via open banking. And they can automatically make a decision on your credit worthiness. The other applications which I think are really cool and are working at the moment is people are using things like sweeping, which is the ability to move small amounts of money from one account to another. And that this can help people to prevent them going overdrawn. So open banking can intelligently move money from a current account to potentially another account or a savings account to your current account to prevent you going overdrawn. And this can all happen automatically if you enable these products.
Oh, no, thank you. And can you give us just an overview of what you're seeing as being the main trends and what's next really in open banking, where you see this going?
Yeah, it's a really interesting one because the success of open banking is judged largely in part to how many participants are taking part in it. And we're seeing sort of API or the calls that happen to the request for information via open banking increased to over 4 billion recently since its inception. So we know more and more people are using it, more and more institutions are using open banking as well. But again, the success is kind of judged on how many individuals are affected by it. I like to draw comparisons, and this is used a lot, to sort of the early days of email and the internet. In the beginning, it's quite technical and there's lots of terms going around which people might not be au fait with. But I'd argue that people probably don't care about the term open banking. They more care about its usage and how it can be useful to them as a business or as an individual. So in terms of trends, what I see happening and becoming more prevalent is HMRC just over a year ago started allowing small business users and business users in general to pay their tax via open banking. So what was happening prior to that is there was a lot of fraud was happening as well. People get fake HMRC scams telling you you owe tax, click on a link and make a payment, and it obviously just worries businesses. We also have invoice frauds that were happening where people will change, you know, one digit or one part of the account you need to send money to, and of course fat fingers, so people sending the wrong amount of money or sending the money to the wrong account. So HMRC decided to trial using open banking, so allowing you to connect your business account and directly make a payment. So there was no checking of account numbers, there's no fat fingers, there's no fraud, because again, it's very, very secure. Mm-hmm. That's taken off by a storm. So what is now happening is the government are now trialing using open banking for making land tax payments, inheritance tax payments, and just broadening the reach there. So I think from a sort of government to a business and a government to individual, open banking is being used to bring a sense of automation and ease for consumers. I think the other side of things, and we haven't really touched on, but obviously it's relevant, is within the crypto space, you do have companies such as Coinbase, as an example, and there's a couple others in the space who are quite keen on doing this as well, who use the data from open banking. So open banking allows verification of identity as well to enable and prevent fraud. So balance transactions can be done via open banking, payments can be done as well. So I think we're going to see more exchanges like Coinbase mm-hmm. enable this to or just increase the security from a user's point of view. One of the other areas that I'm really keen on and I hope to see come to fruition is kind of removing the friction in payment. So for most of us, we use, you know, sort of debit and credit cards, and they incur a fee for small businesses and larger businesses as well. But the small businesses, I believe, feel that affects more because, of course, their volumes are smaller. Having third parties involved for those transactions like your Visas and your MasterCard, open banking allows bank-to-bank payments to happen. So rather than having a middleman processing that payment, taking a little bit of a fee, and then settling that payment at a later date, obviously meaning that the business has to wait for that money, open banking can enable person-to-person payments or person-to-business payments. And there are already applications at the moment that allow you to connect your bank account via your phone and make a payment to a payment terminal in a shop, in a store, that pays the merchant directly to their bank account without incurring any of the sort of Visa card, MasterCard fees that businesses are used to. Now, that is really, really new. But I can't imagine if the rollout and the scale of that improves, that small businesses in particular will be really keen to take advantage of this in the near future.
Thank you. And how mainstream is it already? I mean, you've mentioned a few use cases. Is it something that people are, pretty much everyone is already using without necessarily knowing it?
Yeah, I think it'd be yes and a no. For a small business that I have myself, I use open banking to connect my accountancy solution directly to it, so they can sort of see account balances. I think a lot of small business owners are already using it. Xero themselves enable it. So if you've got a Xero account, you probably would have had information about connecting your account via open banking, so they can sort of read your payments and solutions more easily. So I think a lot of people are using it, but I think individuals through, as I said, some examples of account sweeping and savings probably already do. There are lots of solutions out there where, you know, if you buy a coffee, for example, and it's, you know, £3.50, it can round that up to £4 or up to £5 and place some of that money in a savings account. So just to help us get into a savings habit. And a lot of those run off of open banking and some of the functionality that open banking provides. So yeah, I think it's growing. And certainly in the UK, the figure seems to suggest that in excess of 3 million people using open banking. So it is increasing, but we obviously have a long way to go.
Cool, thank you. I mean, you mentioned Coinbase and some of the crypto exchanges looking at implementing it. Obviously crypto is growing so fast. Do you see any other use cases within crypto or any other sort of the crypto wallets or even the decentralized exchanges or the DeFi platforms looking at using that? Do you know how that would work or if that is a target market for open banking?
Yeah, I mean, you know, when we think about a lot of the controversy that's happened over the past year, especially with the sort of CMA9, they call them, but the main or the largest nine banks in the UK and restricting payments, suspending faster payments for some of the really popular exchanges. And usually the charge that they have is they want to protect their customers from fraud. Mm-hmm. There are lots of fake emails going around telling people transfer money to this exchange and so on and so forth. Now, if you input, if you insert open banking into the middle of that, so, you know, you've got your exchange, you verify and connect your bank account to the exchange, and that's done via the rails that open banking provides, then you pretty much eliminated the fraud element there. Because individuals, and in terms of consumer behavior, you know now that that's connected from my Coinbase account or from my bank. I can directly send money to that exchange. I don't need to worry about copying over sort codes and account numbers and references. And I think you're probably less susceptible as well to any frauds that are telling you you need to send money immediately because your account's going to be locked. So, you know, that is a really, really big one. I think in terms of your KYC and a verifying identity at the moment, you know, there's lots of funky things where you're sort of holding up your ID, you know, reading a statement to your camera to verify yourself on some of these crypto accounts and verify your identity. Open banking has a use case which can eliminate that. You own your bank account. Your bank account has immutable data which identifies you. And via the trusted framework that open banking provides, it can instantly give verification of someone's identity through your access to your banking app and verify that back on the exchange that you're trying to sign up for or service you're trying to sign up for. So those are two really, really obvious ways from my perspective, which I think would work in terms of you know, use cases that can increase and help crypto and make it safer for people in general who are joining more recently and probably not used to all the security factors that are involved.
Yeah, no, thank you. I mean, I think the fraud is a big thing. And so I think when you're looking at some of the, from the point of view of the DeFi platforms, the DeFi wallets, crypto exchanges and so forth, you know, I think we all see how big fraud is in the crypto space. I think it's worth adding that it's not just a crypto thing. One only needs to go onto Facebook Marketplace or so to be bombarded by scam after scam after scam after scam, as I learned the expensive way and as many people have learned the expensive way. But what else would you see as being the sort of the benefits for some of the smaller sort of crypto and DeFi platforms, wallets, exchanges for getting into open banking, and what would they need to do to go about getting set up?
Yeah, you know, one of the really important ones, and Pay UK, who are one of the payments authorities in the UK, you know, we've got, you verify now for all of us when we send payments to somebody. So if, you know, Erica, I wanted to send you £10 and you gave me your account details, there's a confirmation of pay is what it's called, or COP for short. So you would have to give me my name. So when I put your account details in, it will say, you know, these account details match the name you're sending it to. And of course, if it doesn't match that name, then it may suggest an amendment to that. Mm-hmm. And this is, you know, again, one of the main reasons is to prevent fraud and prevent mistakes. Mm-hmm. So I think from the perspective of sort of the wallets and the exchanges out there, to prevent these mistakes, to instill a bit more trust, it's possible to become an account provider for a lot of these firms. Mm-hmm. Now there's a application process, and the same for becoming a third party provider. But in other words, it will enable these companies, if they qualify and they can you know, go through all of the hoops that they need to via Pay UK, to be able to be registered for this account verification process. So again, for individuals sending them money or transferring funds, it just will provide that added layer of protection. Open banking is an organization which is governed by the CMA, so the Competition Markets Authority. So that is also a really good place to start for businesses who think, you know, look, I think I've got a use case here, but I'm not exactly sure how. The team at Open Banking are really good at talking to individual businesses and fintechs who have ideas and sort of guiding them through the process of getting registered and having access. But in I also need to say that there's some really cool providers, you know, I won't say names because, you know, there's quite a few of them who also enable you to use open banking services and not go through open banking. So they can provide a layer of flexibility and help people with ideas come to life. One of the other things I would say, though, in terms of the future of open banking and I think crypto, I think that the two of them are really intrinsically linked, Erica. You know, before technology, at the beginning of sort of human commerce, everything we did was person to person. You know, if I had something, I would trade it directly with you. If I had money, I would give you money to get that service or goods that I'm after. Yeah. You know, crypto and the internet enabled or brought that back, that peer-to-peer connection, person-to-person. So rather than using banks, as we all know, I can directly send you money, receive money, we can trade and so on. And open banking, in a way, does something similar in it. It's allowing individuals, businesses to have more control over their financial data and to directly deal with other individuals or other businesses via open banking. And as I mentioned, removing third-party payment processes as an example. So it's sort of going back to that essence of directly interacting, removing some of the costs, removing some of the fat that people would say, making it more efficient. And I think there's lots of similarities with crypto.
Oh, thank you. And I mean, one of the features, the core features of crypto is that it's so international, it's cross-border. Is that something that open banking can work on a fully international scale? I mean, some of the crypto and DeFi startups you talk to now, they're based maybe in the UK, but targeting Asia, targeting Latin America, that they're working on a very global basis with users all around the world. Is open banking something that could work for all of those users?
Yeah, I think so. You know, there's the UK has sort of been seen as a model of how to do open banking around the world, because we're a few years ahead of some territories. Brazil, at the moment, the Brazilian government is spending a lot of money working with partners who have worked on open banking in the UK to introduce similar functionality. Australia as well is pretty keen on open banking, and they are developing the framework for that to work. I mean, we were quite lucky in that PSD2, so the payments directive, passed down by the EU many years ago, that spearheaded the open banking movement. I think lots of other countries, North America is one, as an example, America is one, sorry, that need to sort of go through that because they have a very fragmented banking system there. Canada as well, I'm aware, is going through an open banking revolution themselves. But one of the things to bear in mind, and I think this is where crypto does trump open banking, is crypto is, of course, borderless. I think for open banking to work for people in developing countries...
who don't even have banking facilities yet, often.
Exactly. I think this is where, you know, and this is another case study, I think, but this is where crypto can help, because a crypto wallet, as long as you've got a mobile phone, and which mobile phone penetration is higher than bank account penetration, as we all know.
Or even access to a mobile phone. Sure.
Yeah, even access, yeah, and you've got data, you certainly can do that. And one of the, you know, again, just to think about where things are going and bypassing potentially banking and cards in general, one of the play-to-earn games, which is really popular, called Axie Infinity, where people get paid to play. In the Philippines, there are more Axie Infinity wallets, so crypto wallets that can accept and make payments, than there are credit cards in that country. So there are more Axie Infinity wallets and credit cards in the Philippines, which is just mind-boggling. So I think, you know, again, if we think of adoption and how this works, open banking solves a lot of issues in terms of trust between moving money to wallets and back to bank accounts. But I think wallets ultimately and access to crypto and data is what's going to help people in developing countries, access the financial world in general.
So a blend of the two you're seeing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Crypto companies working together.
They can work hand in hand. Yeah.
No, amazing, Vince. Thank you so much. That's been super insightful. I did not know that about Axie. I mean, I knew how viral Axie has gone in the Philippines. I've got a Filipina friend, I mean, London-based, and she's been following it and fills us in all the news. And I didn't realize it had gone that big, so that more people have Axie accounts. It's incredible. But no, Vince, thank you so much for that. That's been super informative. And really interesting. So thank you for sharing your knowledge, and big thanks to Plaid for bringing us this open banking series.
Thank you, Erica. My pleasure.
See you
soon. This episode of Crypto Curry Club is brought to you by Plaid. Plaid.com.